The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We turn now to an outbreak that began in 2020. Nope, not that one, not COVID-19. H5N1 bird flu. It led to the deaths of millions of poultry and then subsequently the deaths of mammals. And the World Health Organization are now calling for caution as they say the virus is at risk of a spillover to humans. Well, how serious of a threat is it? To answer that question, I'm joined by Kingston Mills, Professor of Experimental Immunology, School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College Dublin. Kingston, good morning.
Good morning, Anton.
Kingston, I remember speaking to immunologists 20-odd years ago about the threat of avian flu and how real and clear and present a danger it was. And I have, over the years that it gets discussed, it becomes like the boy who cries wolf. Is there a reason to take particular concern or interest in it this time?
Yeah, I mean, avian flu has been circulating since 1996, 97, when it was first detected in Hong Kong. Now, it has never been a major problem. But in between, we have had swine flu in 2009, which was a problem. So it's not a case of crying wolf. I mean, there are viruses that can, influenza and other viruses, as we know from COVID, that can leave the human, that enter the human chain from animals. And this is the concern recently is that this virus, which, you know, mainly infects birds, geese, ducks, and other domestic birds, can get into mammals, as you said. And it's what's happened recently. It's been detected in cattle in the U.S., and one human working on a cattle farm got infected and died. So the fatality rate with this virus is extremely high. Over 50% of people who get infected die. And that's what makes it so worrying, that if it was to get into the human chain, the fatalities could be huge.
That's an extraordinarily high fatality rate for an influenza virus, isn't it? Most of the people who get it dying of it?
Yeah, well, say over 50%. Yes, it is very high. It's the most pathogenic flu virus that circulates, and that's what the concern is about. Now, luckily, it doesn't appear to move from human to human. There's no evidence, really, that it moves from human to human. It moves from animals, domestic animals, into humans. It can do, but that's rare enough. And there's no particular cause to be concerned right now because the numbers of cases are pretty small. In the last number of years, there have been 900 cases of humans getting infected with avian flu, and 52% of those have died. So while it is small, it's not trivial.
Now, as of yet, it doesn't transfer from human to human. Is there any chance that we get a mutation that allows that to happen?
That's the big concern, and that's what happened with flu. Flu, like SARS-CoV virus 2, is a highly mutating virus, so not quite as bad as SARS, but it does mutate. And when mutations occur, the virus adapts to becoming more effective, either A, at transmitting, or B, at causing symptoms. And that's what's happened with this particular one. It's mutated to become more dangerous in terms of disease it causes. Now, if it were to mutate in a way that made it more readily transmissible from human to human, then it might become an issue. But it's very hard to predict that. And at the moment, there's no evidence that that has happened or will happen.
So what is it that the WHO wants us all to do about this?
I don't think there's anything the WHO particularly wants us to do right now except to be alerted to it. And I think, it's really be aware that there is a virus circulating, not in Ireland yet. It's been detected in other countries. We have had avian flu here, as you said, in 2020 and 21, when it killed a lot of ducks and geese, but no humans got infected on that occasion. So it's really to be aware that there's a virus that's in the animal reservoirs that could transmit into humans. And of course, the health agencies will be on the lookout for it. In the US, where they have been detected now in, I think, 12 or 13 states, cattle have been infected with the virus. The interesting thing is cattle don't get severe disease, whereas the birds do. The birds can die from it and the cattle don't, but the cattle can transmit it onto humans, and that's the concern. So I think that's why the WHO have sort of issued this alert. It's really to do with what's happening in the US right now.
And is the transfer to human always from mammal, or can it go directly from poultry to human?
No, it can go from poultry to human as well. And that's where most of the cases to date of the 900 cases we've had in the last few years have come primarily from ducks and geese.
You said that it is a significant threat is in domestic or domesticated animals. I assume, though, it can travel through wild animals into domesticated flocks.
Yes, it can. I mean, deers and other animals can get infected. Horses can get infected with a type of flu, not necessarily this one. So there are influenza viruses that infect many, many species, and that's always the risk of transmission. So it's not just people working with the cattle or in chicken farms where if they were to get infected. The wild animals probably in some ways cause a bigger threat, because it's obviously very difficult to control spread there, whereas within cattle or domesticated birds, it's much easier to control it.
Although I assume one of the great advantages of this is that anybody farming domestic poultry is both incentivized out of altruism, but also out of economic incentive to make sure that their flocks don't get this if it has the kind of fatality rate that you're describing.
Exactly. And I mean, unfortunately, a lot of our domestic animals, are especially birds, chickens in particular, are kept indoors. So they're less likely to come, they're bred indoors and kept indoors. So they're less likely to come into contact with a source of the infection. So really, the cattle who would be outdoors are probably more of a risk. And that's, I think, why the WHO are a little concerned about what's going on right now. Although we've only had one human case of this. So there's no panic about this. It's just something that they have said that people need to be alert to and aware of.
Can you and your colleague immunologists predict which viruses are likely to be the most mutatable or the most mutating and are likely to affect mammals, or is it random?
We do know that influenza viruses, for example, and SARS viruses are quite mutatable. And we do know that the history of those viruses leaving the animal reservoir and entering the human reservoir. So we do know that, but we can't tell, when a sequence change is going to occur that will make it more likely to infect a human. Now, what is good news is that, we have a vaccine against influenza, and not everyone gets it every year, but people at risk should get it, and the young and the old and people who are immune compromised. Now, the current vaccine doesn't protect against this particular. This is called a H5N1. It's the strain of the virus. It has three or four virus strains that it would protect against, but not this one, because there wasn't a need for it. But the pharmaceutical companies that make these vaccines do have ready a vaccine against this particular strain if it was required. So that's something that's very good. The scientists and the pharmaceutical, the vaccine manufacturers have done in preparation for something like this. The flu virus vaccine is very adaptable because it has to be changed every year already because the way the virus mutates. If there was a problem, a particular problem with this H5N1 avian strain, it could easily crank up production of a vaccine very quickly, even quicker than the SARS-CoV virus 2, the COVID-19 vaccines were generated, which took up to about a year. But this could be done in a matter of months.
Well, we're talking about vaccines. Obviously, one of the legacies of COVID is the amount of people who became vaccine skeptic or resistant as a function of the epidemic and the publicity and propaganda that went around it. But one of the other legacies that we were told would happen through COVID was that vaccine technology and development would come on and had come on in leaps and bounds. Is that the case?
Absolutely. I mean, the mRNA technology in particular, the most successful of the COVID vaccines were based on this technology. And it had never been used before except experimentally. And now it's a proven method and of making a vaccine. And the real advantage of it is very quick to make it. It's really quick to change it as well. And you can produce a large number of doses very quickly. So it's a very adaptable method. And now it's being used. My lab is working on a vaccine against whooping cough based on mRNA technology.
Is there not a pre-existing whooping cough vaccine?
There is an existing whooping cough vaccine, but it's not as effective as it might be. And it prevents disease, it prevents whooping cough, but doesn't prevent transmission of the bacteria from one to another. And so we're hoping that we can get a version that will stop transmission. In the same way, cancer, there have been a lot of attempts in the past to get vaccines against cancer. And now with the mRNA technology, this has absolutely come along in leaps and bounds as a result of the flexibility of this technology. So I think we're going to see a huge number of scientific advances on the back of the work that was done during the development of the COVID-19 vaccines.
Kingston, thank you very much. That's Kingston Mills, who is Professor of Experimental Immunology at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology in Trinity College.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.